Welcome to The Grow Show, powered by Steel. On The Grow Show, we share ideas, tips, tactics, and insights to help you grow your landscaping business based on our team's 40 years of experience running a landscaping company and working with other owners and their teams to do the same. New episodes are released weekly on Wednesdays. Here's your host, Marty Grunder.
Well, good morning, good afternoon, good evening, wherever the case may be. This is Marty Grunder from Grunder Landscaping Company and The Grow Group. Thanks for downloading The Grow Show, powered by Steel. Today, we're going to talk to the dynamic father-son duo of Bob and David Grover from Pacific Landscape Management, way up in Portland, Oregon. But first, a reminder, you can get the latest edition of The Grow Show delivered to your phone, tablet, or computer by subscribing wherever you get your podcasts or watch us on YouTube for an enhanced learning experience. The Grow Show is the greatest thing since being a grandpa. I'm one now, Bob Grover is one, and I have to tell you, all the rumors about how much fun it is true. While I feel old, and actually I am old, folks, I am so excited about the future years watching my granddaughter grow up, and I have another granddaughter on the way as my other daughter is pregnant as well. Folks, all facets of life are fun. Bob and David will tell you that here in a second. Enjoy it. Now on to The Grow Show, powered by Steel. We have Bob Grover. Bob, give a wave from Pacific Landscape Management, and his son, David. David, give a wave, who also works at Pacific Landscape Management. And I wanted to share their story with you and talk about their work dynamic and how all this works. I think you're really going to enjoy this. And just so you know, Marty's not perfect. This is take two of The Grow Show. We just had a wonderful 12-minute conversation that the idiot that's talking right now hadn't hit the record button on. So we got to do it again. And I suppose it'll probably be even better. Bob, David, sorry, but welcome to The Grow Show.
Well, I hope we do it well the second time, because I think we killed the first round.
You did kill it. And we're going to get it good here. Bob, let's open it up by telling us about yourself and how you ended up where you are today with Pacific Landscape Management.
Well, that's interesting. And thanks for having us, Marty. I've known you for a long time. I really appreciate what you do for the industry and really appreciate our friendship. You know, it's always interesting when you look back of how did I get where I'm at and what was my motivations. And, you know, I go back to, you know, going quite a ways back of I grew up in suburbia, but we had this wonderful large 1-acre lot in the center of a block. It was the old farmhouse that suburbia built around. We had a pasture, we had a barn, we had a horse, a place that I built forts. We played baseball back there. Family had a garden. I worked in the garden. Not very many high school age kids are gardeners. And I just developed this love of the outdoors. But I think maybe even more significantly, the easiest place for me to get a job after, you know, picking berries and having a paper route was a retail nursery a block and a half from my house. And I went over there as a sophomore in high school and got a job. And then I found I had not just a love of outdoors, but also a love of plants, a little bit maybe off of my gardening. And I thought, hey, maybe this is an interesting career. So I went to Oregon State and studied horticulture. And the first summer I went back, found out that nurseries are really busy in the spring here and slower in the summer. So they said, hey, well, I don't think we can use you in the nursery, but why don't you work in our landscape? So I worked in their landscape summers during college and fell in love with that piece as well. And when I graduated, I went to work for a great company here in the Northwest called Northwest Landscape Industries. And worked there for about 15 years, working my way through, making a lot of mistakes and learning a lot of stuff as I went along, but had a good career with them. About 15 years in, the owners were at this point deciding what they wanted to do to retire. And the beginning of the industry consolidation, they actually ended up selling to True Green Chem Lawn and became True Green Land Care, which is Land Care today after a few iterations. And I all of a sudden became a corporate guy, and I was a regional manager, and I was traveling a lot. And David was pretty young at that point, and I had a younger brother and sister, and I didn't enjoy the travel, and I didn't enjoy really being the corporate guy. So finally decided after a couple of years, maybe I should try my deal myself. So probably the best thing that I did is somebody I'd been working with for most of that career, Elias Godinez, talked him into joining me, and he's my business partner today. And just a great combination of I'm the business developer and general business manager, and he was operations manager, and just been a great, great teamwork. And when we started, said, hey, gosh, we should be able to build a business that would be able to support us and our families. And we had some success early on and started attracting people to help us with that work and manage that work. And quickly found out that it was not just about Bob and Elias and our careers and our families, but the people that we were attracting to work for us. We needed to create opportunity for them. So we grew and grew and grew for 20 years. And 20 years later, we had 3 branches and 200 employees. And it's like, I look back and I go, I don't know how we got here, but we created a culture where we respect people. You know, one of our philosophies is we take care of plants, but it's all about people, whether it's our customers, our employees. Happy employees take care of great customers. And, you know, we created a culture. I don't know how we came up with the name, or our company color is orange, but we call ourselves Team Orange. And that's the spirit of, it's not about me, it's about us. And there is tremendous cooperation between branches, between team members, of making sure that we're taking care of each other so we can take care of the business. And if you take care of each other and take care of the business takes care of you. So it's just been wonderful, great experience. And I pinch myself to believe that we got to where we're at.
What are the annual sales of Pacific Landscape Management now? Where are we at?
Well, today, with our recent growth and a little bit of acquisition moving into Seattle, we'll probably end up this year at about $75
million. $75 million. But listen, folks, all of you that have joined us today on the Grow Show powered by Steel, doesn't matter if you're $500,000 or $300 million. What Bob was just talking about is how you grow a business. And I have to give it to you, Bob. You're one of my heroes. I have so much respect for you. And you know, they say that respect comes from defining the gap between who you say you are and who you are. And I've observed you. And what you're talking about is not some cockamamie marketing line. Your son is living proof. I don't know, David, if you heard this from your dad, but I said to your dad a few years ago, my son's 24. At some point, I think he probably will be here. We'll see what's happening. And I said, Bob, and I'm being very honest here. I said, Bob, I hope one day, if my son is working at Grunder Landscaping, that people think as highly of him as I think of your son. And I go back to the field trip that we did there at your place several years ago. I think it's the best one we've ever done. I really do. And I remember, I think if you would have said to everyone, okay, one of your goals here is to pick out which one's Bob's son, I don't think people would have got it. First of all, you have a whole head of hair. I'm in transition. I'm in transition towards Bob myself, for those of you who are watching on YouTube. But you're a nice guy. You're humble. You've already referred to Bob here as Bob, not Dad. And we'll talk a little bit about that in a minute, because we have a similar dynamic that goes on here in the Grow Group between myself and my daughter, Emily. But glad you're here, David. Why don't you introduce yourself to those that have joined us in the same fashion your dad, Bob, did?
Yeah, no, thanks. And thanks for sharing those comments, Marty. It does, because it means a lot. And I both myself and my father, Bob, you know, we're very intentional about making sure that, you know, we're respecting everybody. We're earning respect of everybody. And that's not different being the owner or the owner's son, you know, of the company. It's important. And so it's nice to hear that. Thank you.
So well said.
Yeah. So a little bit, you know, just about my story and then a little bit of my own update, you know, on my family, which I know Marty wants to hear a little bit, but similar kind of initially, you know, I feel like my connection to this industry and my passion towards pursuing a career in landscape kind of started as a young kid, right? Just connected to the outdoors, loving everything the outdoors has to offer and respecting nature. And so I did a lot of hiking, backpacking, you know, skiing in the winter, water skiing, hunting, fishing, and did all that stuff, you know, with my father as he was very passionate about those activities and outdoors and nature as well. And so that really kind of built that foundation of that respect and that passion for plants and outdoors. And then, you know, as I got older, I helped my dad around the house, helped him in the yard, kind of like he mentioned that he worked in his garden in his yard when he was younger, and, you know, started to learn a little bit about the craft and I really enjoyed it. And then when time came for him to, you know, chart to be an entrepreneur and start a business, I developed a lot of pride and excitement around watching, you know, what was being built and what was happening. And so, you know, there comes a time, right, in in everyone's life when they're younger, when they have to start thinking about becoming an adult and what are they going to pursue and what are they interested in and what are they going to make a career out of. And so that started to, you know, happen for me in high school, as it does with everybody else. And it was no question in my mind that I wanted to pursue a career in landscape. And so, you know, throughout high school, I would ask to go work and do something as I wanted to learn more. And I'd do odds and ends as a high schooler. And I would beg my dad, realizing that some of the work that I was getting was maybe more to keep me busy, have me earn my own paycheck and, you know, to buy my own things, gas, toys, whatever it was. But I started to sense, right, that like, I wanted to be more of a contributing member to this team and what was being built. I wanted to go out on a crew and work alongside a crew. And, you know, I was told, hey, I think, you know, this is very hard work. I think the wiser thing is to make sure you're ready for that work before you, you know, before you're put into that situation. And at the time, I didn't quite understand, right? It was the typical father-child, parent-child relationship. Oh, this doesn't understand that I can do it.
Right. Now your dad, now you know your dad is brilliant, but at that point he was an idiot.
Yeah, exactly. So I tried to argue as much as I could.
I can relate.
Yeah. Oh yeah.
I grew up.
Yeah, exactly.
But you know, looking back on it now, like that was very wise and something I appreciate very much, because he knew, right, that I would have a target on my back, that there would be the stereotype of
absolutely,
you know, the boss's son or the owner's son, you know, believing there's nepotism and wanting to set me up to be successful and trying to dispel those types of stereotypes. And so I finally got the chance after my senior year. You know, I was told, hey, I think you're old enough. I think you're ready. You've demonstrated that. And so, you know, let's go out and, you know, put you on a crew. And we had, you know, I remember talking even more about that, the stereotypes that would come around that and what I would need to do to prove myself, and very, very appreciative of those types of conversations as well, to make me realize, you know, even from my own father, like, look, this is a business and you're David and I'm Bob, and you're going to have the same expectations and standards that everybody else is going to have.
Probably more, quite frankly, because of your last name.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, exactly. Yeah, there's people always looking, you know, to those individuals. And so anyway, I don't say that, you know, I don't want to sound like, you know, oh, I had it harder than anyone else, but I used it as motivation, right? I used it as motivation to prove myself. And so
let me just say this. Mm-hmm. You didn't want anyone to find any reason to say you were there for the wrong reason. You were there to help just like everyone else was, right?
Exactly. Yep.
Yeah. And that's the mindset. Mm-hmm.
Yeah. So I had to create that mindset, and hearing you say earlier, right, that it would have been hard to pick me out of the group of who's Bob's son, because I worked so intentionally to try to create that. And so, but anyway, I had a great, you know, time throughout college. I went to Oregon State, studied horticulture. You would come back in the summers and work through the business and did different things kind of every summer. And now they typically weren't a cushy, you know, easy job. I started out, you know, pushing the 21-inch lawnmower that didn't have the transmission on it on an HOA with a lot of hills and
exactly
running the aerator, the push aerator, you know, and so anyway, sometimes I thought, oh God, are they trying to break me? Right. I kept going.
They may have been.
Yep, exactly. Well, yeah, they want, you know, I had to prove that I wasn't here just to take the easy route, right? I was here and I had to earn it like everybody else. And so I became.
And I think that is so smart that your dad and his partner in the organization did that, because we got to have a vision for where we want you to be and how we want you to be perceived. Like today, I think you're 32. I've lost track.
34.
See, I've really lost track. I mean, to me, you're still 24, but that's so smart and such a great thing for people listening to the Grow Show powered by Steel today that have children that maybe they want to have come into the company. How do you do that? Is it smart? What's the pros, the cons? Such good stuff. Carry on.
Yeah. So basically, yeah, I studied at college, graduated, and came to work full time in the business, and kind of have worked throughout, started in more of a production management role, became an account manager. And now I'm leading a branch as a branch manager and finding different challenges and learning and growing every day. It keeps me fulfilled and I'm loving it. And I'm, I have my own family today.
Yeah.
You know?
Tell us about it.
Yeah. So, and we just welcomed our third child, our beautiful girl, Vivian Rosemary, about a month ago on September 24th. And we're beyond happy. I have two older boys. They're going to turn 2 and 4 here in about over the next couple weeks. And that we were hoping we were going to get a girl. We didn't know the gender throughout the whole pregnancy. It was a surprise up until the very end. And it was the greatest moment ever to just see our girl born there.
Well, those of us listening that have kids, they know how special they are and what meaning they give to our life. And it's just the greatest blessing in the world. And I'm sure it's motivated you at work because, let's just keep it real here. The better you perform at work, the more time and money you're going to have to spend time with them, right?
Correct. Yeah.
And that's kind of how I've always looked at my job. Like it was a conduit to enable me to perform and provide for them at a level that I otherwise wouldn't have been able to do. So great introductions by both of you. So we've got the three locations. You're outside in Portland.
Can I just share a little bit?
Yeah, of course. Of course, David.
Just
go ahead, Bob.
A couple of things that David said. I have seen nepotism go wrong with other landscape businesses in my peer groups over time or with customers. And I was very, very sensitive to not wanting to subject my organization to having to accept a son of mine or a daughter of mine that I wanted. The Grover name got him the opportunity. And from that opportunity, everything that he's achieved on his own. When he was starting to think about what he wanted to do and where he wanted to go to school and pursue a career, I really challenged him. I said, David, I hope you're making this choice because it's what you want to do. Because if you think it's what I want you to do, I only want you to do it if it's what you want to do. And if you don't really love it, you're going to hate it. And he really, really loved it. And then a couple of experiences through his career between his junior and senior year in college, I really wanted him to go out and I'd lined him up to do an internship with another company locally. I just think he really needed to have some experience. Now his beautiful wife and mother of my three wonderful grandchildren was his high school sweetheart. And I tried to talk him into going away just to an internship because I know a lot of people across the country and that wasn't going to happen. But I got him lined up and we're on vacation the first week of school's out. And then he's going to come back and go on to this internship. And I get a call while on vacation and it's Elias, my business partner, saying, hey, Juan got into a car wreck. He was our renovation foreman. And we're trying to sort out how we're going to replace him. And, he's probably going to be out several months. And the group really wants to know how committed David is to that internship because we'd really like him to come back to work for us this summer. And it's like,
I love it.
Wow.
Yeah.
Wow. So he did. And then as we are preparing to move into a formal branch network, and we had three locations, but going through the process of interviewing, David was an account manager at the time and decide we're going to open things up and formalize as branch managers. Talk with David and he goes, I'm definitely interested in that, but I'm not sure I'm ready. I think I'll wait for the next time around. And I tell that to Elias. I go, no, you go back and tell David he needs to apply for one of those positions because everybody applied and we talked to 8 of our people for the 3. And he goes, he's absolutely going to be the right person. So you make sure he applies. And he did. Yeah. And it's like those two experiences where I'm thinking, no, slow down, just really, really super proud moments.
But you handled it right. You let them come to you with what they wanted. You weren't forcing the hand. And I commend you for that. That's without getting into all the details that's going on here, it's a similar situation with my son. He's worked here in the summer. They like him. They'd love to have him here. I'm staying out of it. If it's right, it's right. I'm his dad and I want him to retire here, not make a mistake. So I love what you're talking about. So going back to the business, three locations, Tell us a little bit about your business mix. What kind of clients you serve? I know what it is, but most people listening have no idea. So tell us a little bit about the type of work that you do.
And a little bit has to do with Elias and my background. Now, Northwest Landscape Industries, where we grew up, was a commercial contractor. We did installation as well as maintenance, but Elias and I both worked on the maintenance division and maintenance side. And because that's where our expertise was, that seemed to make the most amount of sense. But I also look back at my 15, 18 years with that organization, and we went through probably at least three recessions. And, you know, when the economy's good, they were tearing and they couldn't, you know, keep up with the work. And when the economy was bad, we had to lay off people and figure out maybe have to sell equipment. And maintenance was always steady, always growing. Maybe the growth slowed a little bit. And I said, you know, if I'm going to operate a business, I don't want to go through those cycles. The other thing that, you know, talking about our culture of being all about people, maintenance, contract maintenance is about relationships. And, you know, ideally we want a relationship for life. And construction is all about getting me to substantial completion. And right. You're an adversary to who you're building this project for. And I just love the relationship piece. I want to have a relationship with my team and I want to have a relationship with my customers. And so that's when we started out. We had several opportunities where people wanted us to do construction work. We do large enhancement work, but it's for the end user, not for a general contractor. And so, yeah, we are a commercial maintenance. About 40% of our work is now HOAs. But all commercial work working for professional property managers.
Terrific. And David, I'm sure you can answer this question. So how are sales going this year? And give us a little clue as to, you know, give us your economic prognostication, if you will, for next year. How are sales this year? What are you seeing out there?
Well, yeah, no, sales have been great this year. We are ahead of our target for sales. There were, you know, sometimes throughout the year where we thought maybe, you know, things were slowing a little bit. There was some more pressure maybe around some pricing and whatnot, but it's remained very, very strong and we're ahead of target, which is excellent. And, you know, next year, you know, I'm not a person that is, you know, I'm going to sit here and say that I know what's going to happen. But, you know, I think there is some fear, right, that we all have around, we got an important election coming up here in less than a week. And that always brings uncertainty around and what's happening with the economy and kind of for us more specifically. And I know in our market, you know, commercial real estate, you've seen headlines in the news about buildings being vacant and, you know, going back to the bank and going to auction for, you know, a fraction of what they were last sold for. And so those things, you know, do have us a little bit, you know, fearful of what's to come. But we believe that if we have strong relationships with our customers and really ask the right questions and really seek to understand their needs or pains or goals that they have, that we can give them solutions and ideas that will continue to have them renew with us, buy extras, do enhancements. And so that's a big focus. And we've just kind of gone through that process of giving our clients a roadmap for the next year and providing them with some ideas and budget figures for things they can do on their property. And so we're very bullish on the future year.
Andrew Grove, the former CEO of Intel years ago, wrote a couple books, and in one of the books, I can't remember if it was the title of the book or
the
just
title
kind
of
what, yeah, that only the paranoid survive.
Yep, it's sitting on my shelf. You know, I could grab that book right now. Yeah,
and it was a great book, and it what he gets at in that book, Bob, since we can probably talk about it, is it's not that you should be paranoid about everything. It was this almost, I'm handicapping this a little bit or paraphrasing, like, the paranoid survive because we're optimistically paranoid. Like we don't go to the airport worried that the plane's going to go down and everybody's going to die, but we go to the airport worried that they might lose my luggage, the flight might be delayed, so I'm prepared. That paranoia, a healthy dose of it, is it's a good thing, isn't it?
When times are great, be prepared for them to be not great.
Yeah, right, exactly. Anything you want to add on what David talked about with regards to sales this year and sales next year?
Yeah, I would completely agree. And, you know, as I'd mentioned, you know, where we're at, we expanded into Seattle a couple of years ago. And you know, the good and the bad news is we're a very dominant player in the Portland market. And
right.
We are challenged by continuing to be able to feed the growth that we would need to continue to build the operation and provide opportunity. So we actually took on an equity partner. You know, that's been a big deal going through the last number of years. And a lot of that had to do with part of it is a long-term, you know, maybe, you know, retirement for myself and Elias, but we needed to be able to move outside of Portland and to move to Seattle. We have a lot of shared customers in Portland and Seattle. And to go into the Seattle market, we just knew we could have to do through acquisition. And we weren't in a place in our careers where we wanted to take that risk or had the capital to do so. So we took on an equity partner. And that occurred about 2.5 years ago. And we now have three branches in the Seattle area. And got to be really careful because we're not supposed to talk about it, but we just signed the Microsoft campus.
Oh my gosh.
So we have, the Seattle market is booming for us.
Yes. My brother lives in Seattle. Yes.
It's a great market. B, we're a smaller player in a huge market and it's our growth machine. So really, really excited of what taking on our equity partner. Yeah, I'm still here. I'm still president. We're still growing. I'm still very, very actively involved. But it's facilitated our growth. We have several people who have transferred to Seattle to help fund our growth. Our organization in Portland has grown by that. So the opportunity in Pacific Landscape Management is greater today because we did that. And I think our entire team is excited, talking about branching out into the Southeast California. And really, really exciting.
Southwest.
Southwest. How did I say that?
Yeah.
Southwest.
No, that's okay. So going into another market like that, certainly marketing and sales are a focus. What are some of your best marketing and sales tactics? And I don't want to know them all, but give a couple that might be helpful to our followers.
Well, just it kind of goes similarly to Seattle as it has been over time in Portland, is you need to develop relationships with the people that you want to sell to, and or leverage the relationships of the people that you already work with to maybe expand and get referrals. So we are incredibly active in all the real estate trade associations and NAIOP and BOMA and IREM and CAI and IFMA. And that has just been a huge piece of, you know, it's something that I see with people is they'll sponsor an event and they won't be at the event. They'll have their name on the. No, we go to the event. We interact with our people. We see those people. So, you know, commercial maintenance is relationship-based business. Whether it is commercial, industrial, or HOAs, you need to develop relationships with the property managers, and you need to serve them well and play on their, you know, play in their fishbowl. And that is the one piece that we're very, very active in. As we went into Seattle, we did the same thing, is very, very active in those trade organizations. We also have business developers, and, you know, business developers don't necessarily need to be landscapers, and we don't want them to be used car salesmen, but they have to be people that understand how to interact with people and how to open doors. And our philosophy is our business developers get the door open, and then we bring in our account managers and branch managers, the experts, to help them sell. So they're door openers, and our branch managers and account managers are closers.
Oh, that's great foundational stuff. Again, no matter what size your business is, folks, that's, you got to get involved. And Bob, I see that so many times. People say, well, we sponsored this, we sponsored that. I know you say to do that, but didn't do any good. Well, did you go to the meeting and did you like, well, we went there, but I didn't know anybody. Okay, but isn't that a good thing? Like, if you didn't know them, that's a chance to introduce your company. So, and I get it that it's uncomfortable. It's awkward to some, but once you have some success, and once you have some success and realize how effective that is, that's a pretty cool thing that you can use to grow your business. So a little bit of sales and marketing tactics. Let's go to David for this one. You know, the biggest challenge continues to be finding and keeping labor in the field. At least we see that in our peer groups. We have over 220 peer groups now in our stable, and we're seeing that stem to stern. I know that you all participate in the H2B program. Bob, I know, like me, you're very active in what the wonderful association we belong to, the National Association of Landscape Professionals, which here's a commercial for them, folks. If you're not a member, give me a call. Let's talk about it, because the advocacy alone that they do for our industry you should be a member. You cannot do that. If you found out what Andrew Bray and his team there were doing, and I know Bob, David's nodding, you need to join. They're helping. We wouldn't have an H2B program, Bob. I think it would be
absolutely correct.
It would be a mess if it weren't for what Andrew and NALP has done there. But David, speak to your efforts about finding, keeping people, what you're doing. How can you help the many landscapers that have joined us today?
Yeah, no, thanks, Marty. Yeah, we've utilized the H2B program, and it's been a really important component of our business throughout the years. And yeah, I do want to just, you know, myself, you know, thank Andrew and, you know, his team and all the volunteers and from companies that have helped, you know, lobby and advocate for that, because it has been huge for us. But the great thing about it, you know, it can be very expensive, but the, you know, the reliability and the consistency you get through it with your staffing is huge. Now the big thing is only if you get your visas, right? And that's the big challenge with H2B. It's a very sought after program. There's a lot of demand for it, yet it's not being expanded as much as it probably should be. And so yeah, it's been tremendous for us. However, you know, this year we didn't get all of our visas, and, you know, particularly in our Portland, Oregon market, we didn't get any visas here. And so we had to go throughout the year trying to staff up, you know, with local talent. It was actually kind of shocking this year as we were faced with that challenge. We actually were nervous about it, but found success, and we were able to staff up fairly successfully for all the spots we had open before we really got into the season. And I don't know, you know, why that was. You know, I think part of it is we have, you know, created a great culture. You know, our employees go out and talk about, you know, how great it is to work on our team and share that. And as that works around and people hear we're hiring, they come into the door. I think part of it was also, you know, just where the economy was and maybe still
is.
It's
right.
Yeah. We had a lot of people coming in our door from the construction trades looking for work, because I think things really slowed down with interest rates being quite a bit higher and people accessing capital and funding to go build buildings and sell houses. That started to soften. And so I think that helped us out quite a bit. And
Well, did you put an ad in the paper? Did you use Craigslist, Indeed? What did you do to get people in the door?
Now, we were a pretty strong believer. You know, if we feel like we maybe need to go to those lengths to staff up, we've maybe done that a long time in the past and have maybe considered it in some situations. But we believe if we can get, you know, people in the door that hear great things, or are, you know, a family member or a friend of someone that already works
here. They were mostly referrals. Is that where it came from?
Yep.
Amazing.
Yep. And we do have a referral program to where people can, you know, be compensated if they refer an individual and they come to work here. And, you know, there's rules around it. And, you know, they've got to be here for a certain amount of time. It's not like they can just, you know, not like we can hand out a check, you know, when they show up day one. They got to be here for a certain amount of time before they get that referral. But that has worked, you know, really well for us. And we find that we have better success, right, when there's already connection to the company, right? That person really is vetted. You know, we know them, you know, this other employee is vouching for them. And so they, you know, there's a sense of, I better come in
They're like vested in their success, and they're going to hopefully kind of mentor them into a spot where they've made that person look good and themselves look good for referring someone, I would assume.
Exactly.
No, I mean, I think most normal human beings want to have a good, you know, be a good reference there. So,
you know, and I think something else that's really important is, you know, that's just basically the seasonal labor component, which is about 20% of our workforce. And I'll give another big shout out to my business partner, Elias, of the culture that is created for development of people. And, you know, we talk about, you know, our business is taking care of plants, but it's all about people. He's not here in the room, so I'll pick on him. He's not much of a landscaper. He knows how to do all that stuff. You should go to his house. He doesn't have a landscape. He lives on a farm.
Okay.
He is here to be able to change people's lives.
Yeah.
Of our field managers, we're in the account manager, field manager structure, to where there's a partner account manager, field manager. 80% of our field managers started with us as laborers and have grown themselves up to a crew leader and now are professional managers. And
amazing.
The growth and development within our organization and the opportunity and the training that we provide. When people come on board here, they know that there's opportunity and it's a great culture and a great place to help grow and build people. And I give all that credit to Elias because he's here to change people's lives and he's doing
it. Well, and that's a great segue here. So let's get back into a little bit more between the dynamic between the two of you. What challenges have you had working together? Are there rules? You know, I know, Bob, not all your kids work at Pacific Landscape Management. Why? Just give us a little bit inside baseball on, you know, what challenges either one of you talk about it so that, you know, again, there's so many people listening today that maybe they have a family member on the team or they're thinking about it. I think there's so much help you could and insight you could give on this.
You know, that's a good question. And I think as you'd mentioned, even Dave mentioned earlier, early on, it says, I'm Bob, I'm not Dad.
Right, exactly.
And actually, you know, everybody that works here, I think, quickly figures that out. But I'll occasionally have a customer say, hey, is David your son? You know, just to have people have to ask that, I'm kind of proud.
Why wouldn't you be? Exactly.
Yeah. You're both Grovers. So is he your son kind of thing?
Yeah.
You know, and, you know, there have been tough moments trying to separate out fatherhood and leadership. They've had some moments. We try really, really hard when we're together as a family that we don't talk much about business. Now, it's hard to say we never talk about business, but we're very, very careful to, you know, 9 to 5 or 6 to 5.
I try to do the same thing with Emily. I think that is so smart.
Yeah. And when he came on board full time, he's worked at one of our branches, which is separate from our main corporate, one of our branches at our corporate location. And it's kind of nice that he's not in the same building as me. So we can interact. You know, I'm out to his branch quite frequently, but just trying to make sure that we are separating it, father and son, and respecting each other as individuals and coworkers as opposed to father and son.
And I know it's very hard because I experience it, like you want to talk work or whatever. And I really try to resist that. You know, there just can be animosity built up with that. And I think you're very, very smart for doing that. David, challenges from your perspective, what is something that all of us can glean from?
Yeah. You know, I wanted to talk a little bit about that, you know, dad, you know, versus Bob thing. And I think originally when we talked about that, you know, I think that was born out of a way in which we're going to talk, or maybe I'm going to use, you know, what word am I going to use to describe, you know, my dad, Bob, in a situation in which we're at work, and just to make it not seem like if we're interacting with a customer or a coworker, that it bring that kind of family tie into the situation. We want to try to keep those things as clean as possible, and really being a way of, like, you know, being intentional about how this is being perceived by others. But as I've reflected also, you know, throughout the years, I think it also does a good thing, you know, for both of us when we kind of, you know, have those clean lines of distinction. And what Bob kind of said earlier of, you know, when we're at work, I call him Bob, and that is a very kind of intentional and kind of tricks the brain into thinking like, okay, this is work. I'm, you know, he's not my dad, and I can't hold him, you know, hold something against him, a decision he made, or maybe the look he gave me or whatever, you know, and feeling like, oh, you know, Dad gave me that.
I mean, I love hearing because it goes both ways. That's all we want, right?
Yeah, exactly. Yeah. And then when I'm at home, he's my dad, he's my father, he's, you know, and so it just helps keep those lines very, very clean and clear. It's not just for the perception out there, but I think it's important for us. And so that's been really helpful. I know for me.
And as I said, it's not always been easy because honestly, I will admit that part of me is a very driven person, and I'm not always easy to work for and can be very demanding, and, you know, wanting to make sure that I turn that off, very respectful, but very demanding. But when it's home, it's very loving.
And I can relate. Both of you have thrown down some leadership gold on this topic, Is there any other advice that you'd have for those of us who have kids at working at our companies or maybe considering it? Is there anything maybe we haven't covered that either of you want to reflect upon?
I talk quite a bit, and this is maybe more for, you know, people that are listening that are maybe second or third, you know, generation and maybe in my shoes, you know, and I've talked here already about just wanting to dispel, you know, any sort of stereotype and wanting people to, you know, not know that I'm, you know, Bob's son or whatnot, and just try to dispel that. Now, and that was a big thing that I was very intentional about and motivated to accomplish. Now, as I maybe move my way up into greater levels of leadership, I've reflected and realized that strong desire also to prove myself, it was very good in earning respect and delivering to my customers and have, you know, demonstrating to people, you know, that I'm here to work just as hard as everybody else. But at the same time, I think that kind of that attachment to that and that obsession. And as I, you know, maybe got into a larger team of leading, you know, people who were my peers previously in my previous role, that I've had to also, and I know you, I heard you describe me earlier as being a humble person. And I really do believe I'm respectful and humble towards other people. But I've also felt that I've had to sometimes kind of tone it down a little bit and kind of bring my intensity down a little bit. And at some point that kind of obsession and that attachment to wanting to be perfect, to not wanting to give anyone any sort of reason to say,
I get it. Yeah. Struggle's real. Yeah.
And so I've had to work really hard also at sometimes realizing that and trying to humble myself even further and go, you know what? This isn't the end of the world if we don't get this goal that I had set out. You know, this is a learning moment, and maybe I have something to learn here, and maybe I need to be true to myself and true to other people that I'm working with, that I made a mistake, that wasn't the right decision. Because in my quest to be perfect and to demonstrate to everybody that look, I'm earning this, I think sometimes I would dig my heels in, and people may have described me, you know, several years ago as, you know, getting defensive or, you know, maybe being closed-minded because
I think all that's natural, Dave. David, I think that's all natural. Yeah. I get it. There's a lot of stress. You feel a marked man. And I think probably at some point that's going to completely go away, because in 6 years, you're going to be 40. And while I wouldn't call 40 old, but you're not going to be a kid at 40. And because, you know, Emily and I here at the Grow Group kept our relationship kind of under wraps. I can't tell you how many people, when I finally just said, that's enough of it. If you don't realize Emily's here because she's smart, she does a great job, then something's wrong with you. I've just blown her cover on numerous occasions. And it's to the point now where I'm proud to work with her. I'm proud that she's an employee, no matter who she's related to. And, you know, the Grow Group is all about teaching and inspiring the owners and leaders of landscaping companies to take their endeavors and their relationships with their people, their families, to another level. And I want them to see that it can work. It's a struggle. It's not easy. You don't just go and, you know, I can't tell you how many consults I've been on, Bob and David, where I've had to tell the CEO, hey, listen, Charlie is a wonderful kid. I know he's your son, but he doesn't want to be here. He's not doing a good job, and this isn't a fit for him, and I think he needs to go. And I remember in one particular instant when I told a CEO this, I could just see him just melting. And I said, hang on, he may not want to be here. This might be a good thing. Don't fret yet. Let's talk it through. But this isn't working in part because Charlie's not producing. Bob, anything you want to add to what David said or any other advice you have to share with us today?
Well, that makes me think a little bit, your last comment. You know, I have three children. David is the oldest, and David's the one operating in our business. And our daughter's a nurse, and my youngest son is working in real estate. And both of them never really showed any interest, and I never encouraged them. And I one of my favorite stories, when Connor was driving around with Teresa, my wife, when he was really young, drove by, I think they were out driving around and drove by one of our trucks. And Connor, sitting in the passenger seat with his feet up on the dashboard, I think, says, Mom, do I have to work for dad like David does when I'm older?
Right.
You know, follow your passion.
Yes. Amen.
Encourage, if there's anything advice I would give to people with kids that are considering that, do what I did. Challenge them that this is the right decision, and don't encourage them. Don't force them. Support them in whatever they want to do.
Amen.
Maybe it's hard to support them to be a starving artist, but you know, support them in doing what they love.
Right.
Because you can make money doing anything in the world if it's your passion.
I got some great advice from a mentor of mine. His name's Les Banward. He's probably listening. And Les advised me when my children were young, he said, make sure all of them spend at least a summer working there. We don't ever want them to have feelings of animosity that they didn't get a shot. Let them come in there. Let them understand that. My two middle kids, they're both girls. They'll never work here. My one daughter is in finance for JP Morgan, and my other daughter is an occupational therapist. And this wouldn't been a fit. So I would say in due time, my son may be here. Emily's doing a great job. We have a great relationship. She reports to my partner, Vince, in the Grow Group. So there's a little bit of one-off there. It works very, very well. So, I mean, I think we've done a lot of good today talking. I appreciate both of you showing so many vulnerabilities. A couple more questions before we wrap up this week's edition of The Grow Show, powered by Steel. We've been having a great conversation with Bob and David Grover from Pacific Landscape Management in Portland, Oregon. Bob, you are known for a wonderful talk that you titled, Don't Suck at the Landscaping Part, I think is what you titled it. And you talk about that. And I want you to share just the cliff notes of what that talk and that philosophy is all about, because I think it's just terrific.
I am shocked at probably the number one and two things that I've learned over the years is people asked us to take a look at giving them a proposal for their property is A, I have to tell my landscaper what to do. B, I call my landscaper and I can't get them to call me back. C, I'm asked them to give me a proposal and they won't give me a proposal back. It's just, I think there's something or other about a lot of people that love this industry because they want to be a landscaper and they love doing great work, whether it's installation or maintenance. And they're so focused on that, they forget they're doing it for people. Now, my business, you know, Elias really struggles with the phrase, don't suck at the landscape part, because he thinks that I'm diminishing the value of the landscape part. And I'm saying, no, but the whole point is you don't get credit for what you don't talk to your customers about. So we focus, whether you're a laborer or a crew leader or a field manager, you're working in the field, you got to communicate up the chain of command so we can talk to the customer. And whether you are an account manager or a branch manager, you got to get that information back to the crew that we're a connection of the landscape to our customer. And that's all about communication. And if you do a perfect job and don't talk to your customer, you won't get credit for anything.
Right. You know, it's amazing, Bob. We've grown tremendously the last 3 years. And in doing follow-up, I followed up. Most of our growth has come on the commercial side. And in follow-up, I say, how's it going? Oh, it's fantastic. They're here the same time every week. All your people are so polite. They're smiling. They're friendly. The communication is fantastic. We're very happy. Well, how's the landscaping part? Oh, well, no, that's really good too. But the part that you're really good at,
yes,
that's like an epiphany, Bob. And it's exactly what you're talking about there. That, you know, be really good at the landscape part. It's the other things you got to make sure that you're talking about and communicating well, and those details that really, truly can help us stand out in the sea of sameness. David, let's change the topic a little bit. You fit right into that. You're maybe just on the top end of it, I suppose. You know, again, you will probably always be 24 years old in the world, according to Marty. But what are people your age and younger looking for in a job? What concerns you? What legacy things are there that your dad did in the business that you think need to stay? What are things that you as a new generation think need to be in there? Can you talk to us a little bit about the culture, the workplace, what is someone looking for? Because even at times, I found this the last 5 or 6 years, and Bob, maybe you found it as well. Like, there's some times where I honestly have to admit I'm out of touch. Like, I'm surprised by some of the things people would want in a job and don't want. And I think it's important. There's too much yelling going on now and arguing. Let's listen to one another and try to get better.
Yeah, no. Yeah, it's tough, you know, as there's generational, you know, differences, but, you know, and I'm not going to speak for everyone that's my age or in my generation, but, you know, I think in general, right, people in my age group are, you know, just looking for stability and ultimately, you know, growth opportunities and to be a part of something, you know, that's not just making money, but is actually benefiting, you know, the world, benefiting, you know, the next generation and setting a path forward that was better than where we came from. And so I think, you know, ultimately, like that's the sense I get, you know, when I talk with my peers.
Or just, so how do you, and I agree with you because we find the same thing. How do you communicate that you're doing something better for the world, or what are you doing there? Like, you know, Bob just talked about the importance of telling them what you did. I find sometimes that we have to not be so humble with our team. Like, we got to tell them some of the good things that we're doing. Like, for example, we have a bonus program here that's stair-stepped. 1 to 3 years gets one level of a bonus. 3 to 5 gets another. 5 to 7 gets another. 10 plus gets another. Well, if somebody's been here 8.5 years, you probably should be telling them, hey, I just want to let you know, as we do our one-on-one here, you're 1.5 years away from going into another tier. And the reason I think you need to say that stuff is that might be, I don't know, they may be waning. They may be looking, and it may be like, gosh, darn, I mean, I don't want to leave. I want to stay around and get that. I mean, yeah, I got a little problem right now with my supervisor, but I need to work on that. I need to stick. Am I making sense?
Yeah. Yeah. No, I think so. And just like what Bob said of like, you know, we focus so much on, you know, communicating to the customer that we also need to be reminding, you know, even our own team members of like, what are we doing and why are we doing it? And then, and what are, you know, what are the benefits that you're getting here? And
just don't suck at the paycheck part.
Yeah.
Right? There you go. That's a whole other talk we could have you give, Bob.
Yeah. So I think that's a good point, Marty. I mean, we do a lot of good, you know, wanting to provide the best opportunity for our team. And sometimes in the busyness of just providing great service to our customers and making sure we're following through on our commitments, you know, sometimes we forget to celebrate and talk about those things. And it's simple, right? I talked about the referral bonus that we do. You know, that check could just, you know, be directly deposited into their bank account or show up, you know, in their mailbox. Or better yet, why don't we celebrate it and in our, you know, weekly training meeting say, hey, you know, this guy is earning a check because he referred
and
this
here's,
other
and
guy.
Here's the cash.
Yes, exactly. Here's
the cash. Yeah. Put it in your pocket.
Exactly.
Right.
Yeah. So yeah, I think that was good. And, you know, I think there's an interesting thing too. And as we're getting, I think our industry, well, in our world in general, I feel like is on the cusp of this, you know, with AI and all this stuff of just this kind of crazy breakthrough in automation and all this kind of stuff. And I think that's really exciting for the younger generation. And we love technology, but I think we have to, as business owners also, or you know, business people, understand that, you know, there's trade-offs with technology as well. And I think, you know, young people love technology. They want to figure out how they can leverage technology to make their lives easier, to be more effective in their jobs, but it can also be detrimental. And, you know, I think we see it, right? Like as people are more reliant on technology and more, you know, just in front of their phone, and they're not getting the real true human connection.
No. And they're using a text to communicate criticism when they shouldn't be doing that, or they're emailing it, or they're, you know, employees are posting bad things about their boss on social media channels. I mean, all those things are just, no, that's not what that piece of technology was intended to be used for. That's where this anger comes from.
Exactly. And so I think that's one of those legacy things, right? That, you know, yeah, we want to use technology to make our businesses more efficient and more profitable, but also understanding of the value that we get from true human
connection. Of the old fashioned communication and the human connections.
Yeah.
Bob, any final comments on that? I got one more question after that I want to ask you folks, and we're going to wrap it up.
Yeah, and that's interesting. I think I felt that I struggle with not the millennials, but the Z generationers. And I don't even know what they call the kids coming out of high school today. And I think COVID changed, you know, made it even worse of this whole lack of understanding how important worth of your occupation is. But I think the one thing that I felt and noticed that people that are attracted to the landscape trade are less likely to be that, you know, ugly part of the Z generation or don't want to work and don't care and all that kind of stuff. So I feel fortunate to be surrounded by a bunch of people that break the mold of the millennial or Z generationers.
Right, right. Well, and you know, hopefully today we did some good there. You two are a shining example of two generations working together, irregardless of your relationship as a father and a son. I think that's the kind of give and take that you want to see going on. I think, you know, when we think we've got all the answers, that's a very dangerous position to be in. We have to be willing to listen to one another, you know, position to be in. We have to have taught me things and I just look and I'm like, where? And I have been pleasantly surprised. There's been some things. We have two young people we're training as sales professionals. And when they've gone on a call, I've sent them an email and I've just said, hey, how'd your call go? Could you tell me what the big takeaways were? You were on that call with me. What were your takeaways? And I showed some of the takeaways the one young lady shared with me here, Macy, with our president, Seth. And he read them and he's like, oh my gosh, talk about understanding what we are trying to do. And so I think folks that are listening, like give some young people a shot, and young people, give old goats like myself and Bob Grover a shot too. We can help each other if we just look at each other as a person that can contribute rather than, you know, where our age is or where we came from, our color, our background, whatever that is. There's just so much good that can come from that diversity perspective. Is there anything I didn't ask either of you that you're dying to get off your chest that maybe we missed? Is there any final point you'd like to make?
Ask us a little bit about the Oregon State University Beavers.
Okay. What about the Oregon State University Beavers?
Well, I will tell you, I brag, you know, a little bit. Won't be humble at this point, but that's where Teresa and I met. That's where David graduated. That's where his brother and sister graduated. That's where David's wife graduated from.
And good Lord.
There are nine OSU Hort grads on the...
I've seen it on the website. It's very impressive.
I believe we are the largest employer of Hort grads, Oregon State University Hort grads outside of the university or some governmental agencies. The Beavers are strong with us, partly why we're called Team Orange.
And partly why your team colors are orange and black. I love it.
Go Beavs.
Yes. Well, David and Bob, you two guys are good guys. Feel me come through here. I'm giving each of you a hug. I appreciate the vulnerability that you displayed today and shared, and I look forward to talking to you again. So thanks a lot for coming on The Grow Show.
Thank you for having us.
Thanks.
All right, folks.
It was a pleasure.
Yeah. Of course. It was fun. That's going to do it for The Grow Show, folks, powered by Steel this week. If you haven't done so already, subscribe to The Grow Show, and if you can, give it a rating or share a comment. That helps more success-minded landscape professionals find us. And if you really want to help us, share this episode with your team or any landscape pro you know. Take your phone out right now and text it to them. Thanks for joining us on The Grow Show this week. We'll talk to you next week.
Thank you for listening to this episode of The Grow Show. Be sure to subscribe so you never miss an episode. And head to growgroupinc.com for more information and resources to grow your landscaping business. A special thanks to the folks at Steel, whose support makes this podcast possible and whose reliable handheld power equipment makes our jobs easier daily. We'll talk to you next week.